Hey, friends, and welcome to another podcast episode. I'm your host, Taylor Petrinovich, joined by my co-host, Kelly Gilster.
Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. Taylor, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited because today's episode, you know, we are fully in this all-star guest series, which has been such a hit. I think people have been loving it. So if you're listening to this and you've been really enjoying it, would you mind just like popping over on Instagram at the Level Up Co and just send us like a quick little DM like, hey, I listened to this episode and I really liked it, or this resonated with me. That actually like gives us such great information and feedback to know what you guys are liking and what you're resonating with. So that will guide our decisions moving forward with the podcast. Like, this show is for you and this is for you guys to benefit from. So we want to make sure we're doing that. But I'm great. It is spring. The birds are chirping. We actually have like a little nest in our backyard close to our, we have like a vegetable garden with some like fruit trees and stuff too. And the little baby birds are like all hatching out of their eggs and it's so cute.
Cute. We have an orange tree in our backyard and there is a little nest back there too. And so that's so fun. Wait, tell me about your vegetables. I didn't know you had a vegetable garden. Is it thriving?
No, Kelly, it is not thriving. when we first built it and planted it, like we have like a cute little picket fence around it and like four different raised beds. And in the past, we've, you know, really done a great job and we've had everything from like lots and different types of tomatoes and peppers and squash and zucchinis and all the things. But last year, like we have a two-year-old now, so like two other kids plus a two-year-old, and I just felt like something had to give and I just had no more energy for that. So I'm kind of thinking like it's not too late maybe to like kind of you know, do a little garden refresh and get some things planted here last minute. But in past years, I've actually like started seeds inside, like done the whole thing and then like transplanted them. Yeah. One of the ways I'm a little bit nerdy, but yeah.
That's so fun. I want to get into it. Paul wants to get into it too. Paul is the primary cook in our household. So he would love to have like herbs to clip from, and he never really had interest in fruit, but or like vegetables, but now we kind of do. We went to a birthday party a few weeks back and the family had a vegetable garden in the backyard and he was like, "Ooh, look at this. This could be really fun." And I'm like, "Yes, it could. Let's do it." So we'll see if we get our act together and get it going, but eventually it'll be on the horizon. But anyways, back to our podcast guests for today, Chris with Storybox. We had just had such a good time with him. And when we recorded, we actually realized Chris and I could have recorded this live together because he was visiting some friends out in Laguna Beach, which is 20 minutes from me. And it was just so fun. So he's such an inspiration. He is like the ultimate networking guru. Like, we had Chris speak in our very first mastermind program as a guest speaker. And I remember getting off of that teaching and was like, I literally do nothing for my business. He does it all. And so I know that you guys will absolutely love this episode. He is the kindest human, always open to questions and conversation. He gatekeeps nothing. And we know you'll love this one.
This is the Level Up Podcast. I'm Taylor Petrinovich.
And I'm Kelly Gilster of 618 Studios.
And we are on a mission to help wedding filmmakers and photographers level up their businesses so you can make more and work less.
We want to help you confidently take your business from mainstream to luxury, and it all starts right here. Well, hey, Chris, we are so excited to have you on the podcast today as a part of our All-Star series that we are in the midst of. Thanks so much for joining us.
Of course. My pleasure. Super excited to be here.
Yeah. So we are sitting right now in March, and actually we were just chatting before we hit record, and you are like 10 minutes away from me right now visiting some friends in Newport Beach.
Yeah, you never know where I'm at. Always bopping around. Came here on a whim.
You did. And I feel like you're going to get into like that a little bit more because you're trying to talk about just like taking risks in your business. And I feel like you took some pretty big risks in the last 3 years. And so we're excited to hop into that. But before we do, can you just give a brief intro of, you know, those who are listening, maybe who you are, your business, where you're based, who you serve?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm now based in, well, hi, I'm Chris Jesperson. Okay, great. I own Storybox Cinema, and right now I am based in Austin, Texas. And yeah, we travel all over the world. My team is spread out all over the world. I live in Austin. I sleep in Austin, as I say, but I travel quite a bit, and we serve high net worth individuals. We shoot incredible weddings and yeah, some of the craziest things I've ever seen in my life, but we get to go film them and travel the world and have a blast.
It's so fun. It's so fun to keep up with your work and even just like your a little bit more of your personal life on stories. It's almost like you have this air of mystery of like, where is Chris today? Where's Waldo, you know? So it's so fun. And I love that you said it's a blast, you know, serving these high net worth individuals, because this podcast is really circled around helping filmmakers and photographers enter the luxury space. And one of the reasons we really kind of champion is because it's so creatively fulfilling. It's just a lot of fun.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely a blast. I think, you know, the cooler weddings I've done, and in some sense, they become easier at some level. I mean, okay, let's not pretend I just said that. They are more difficult in a lot of ways, but you know, they're pretty beautiful. You get to go to some really cool locations. I think when I was first starting compared to now, you know, visually or aesthetically what they look like is, you know, is pretty incredible. So it's a joy to get to film some of these insane events.
Yeah, it's so, and yeah, like you said, you are doing like the most top tier ultra luxury events. And so for those who aren't following Storybox Cinema on Instagram, go give them a follow right now. Open up your app, go give them a follow, because you'll just be mind blown at the quality and I don't know. It's just like the sky's the limit on these events. That's probably how you feel too.
It does kind of feel like that. Every time I show up, there's always a new surprise. Or, you know, you walk in and you're like, oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's important for me and important for our team to always make sure that we're feeling, you know, trying to be present. I think, you know, you're going to all these different locations and kind of on an airplane a lot and flying all over, but it's pretty incredible to get to sit there and look at what we're filming sometimes and the opportunities and the places we get to be. And it's not lost on me. It's pretty incredible. So, yeah.
I love that. Okay. I would love for you to kind of maybe paint a picture of what Storybox Cinema looks like sitting here in 2024, giving an idea maybe of like price point and what your business is looking like. And then I kind of want to rewind it back, because I know it was quite a journey to get to where you are today.
Sure. Yeah. So right now we have three different teams, me leading one. Then we have two other teams that work within Storybox. We're at a couple different price points. I start for the day around $32,000 for a wedding. And then we move up from there for extra days. You know, our average booking is around 50 plus, and yeah, goes up from there. But I'd say that's on average. And then we have other teams that are around 20, 25. So
cool.
Yeah,
that's so great. Yeah. And for those who are thinking to themselves, like, I didn't even know that these numbers existed, I think we are all in that mindset at some point. Chris, I'm sure that you never thought, you know, 3-5 years ago that this was ever going to be a possibility for you.
Right. No, I'm not independently wealthy. No way. I had no idea. I think that was more than than a lot of weddings I had attended to, you know, up until that point, probably more than they even cost in total. So it blew my mind again. It was crazy. But you know, once you get into it and you see the work that goes into it and the time it takes to kind of get there, I think it is more than worth it. And I think it could go up for sure. But yeah, no, I had no idea. I remember I walked into that just even really quick. I went into one of my first experiences with luxury was walking into the Four Seasons Resort in Lanai about 6 or 7 years ago. And I thought we were going to the Four Seasons Sheraton or something. I had no clue. I didn't know what the Four Seasons was. I had no idea. And I remember walking in and they knew my name. They knew where I came from. They knew my flight info. They could talk to me. You know, they already knew who I was, and I never experienced that sort of luxury, and that kind of hooked me. I was pretty, you know, enamored with the whole thing. And then it kind of went from there. But yeah, that initial hook of that luxury and even knowing that that existed blew Chris's little mind.
Yeah. I mean, Taylor and I are very transparent in saying that we grew up very middle class. The weddings that we went to as friends, cousins, family, it was like, okay, everybody grab your chair at the end of the ceremony and let's take them over to find your take your seat at the reception. Like, those were the weddings. Like, that was our worldview. And for me, like, I thought that, like, the Marriott was, like, top tier. Like, I'm like, oh, we're talking luxury, or like Hyatt. Like, we're talking Hyatt. We're like, oh, yeah, that's luxury. I didn't know what a Montage property was. I didn't know what a Rosewood property was. I didn't know what an Aman property was. It takes, you know, just the awareness around you to know that luxury is so many. Take what you believe might be luxury and then let's go up like six more flights.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a fun world.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so you started your business in what year?
2016. What year is it? 2024. Cool. Whoa, crazy. Wow. Yeah, 2016. Maybe a little bit before.
Okay, cool. And where did you start? Like, did you do the same thing as us? You shot your first wedding for free or $500? Where were you at?
Let's think. Yeah, I never wanted to shoot weddings before in my life. I started my own business and wanted to shoot commercials. That's kind of the world I came from, was commercial work, documentary work, productions, movies. Never wanted to shoot a wedding in my life. I ended up shooting a couple friend of mine, Bree and Matt Shepard, wanted me to shoot their wedding, and they said they'd give me $1,000, and I was like, I am mother effing rich, like, watch out world, $1,000 cash in my pocket, holy smokes. So I shot their wedding, and then, you know, never, I loved it because it was a beautiful location, they're a beautiful couple, and I was so excited to put that in my film reel along with a lot of other things. But I thought, you know, if I was to shoot one wedding and be rich, you know, with $1,000, this is the perfect one. Well, I did that one, and then continued. And then all of a sudden I kind of realized, wait, I like weddings. Weddings are pretty fun. I studied journalism all through college. So I really actually have a love for in real time storytelling. I always wanted to shoot documentaries. So film or for weddings ended up becoming this nice marriage of, you know, cinematography, getting to practice and flex that muscle while kind of having the adrenaline and fun of a live event. And I think it has these nice bookends to it. We know what's happening. We know why we're there. But there's a lot of the creative freedom in there. And I think a lot of people see weddings as maybe stifling that creative freedom. I see it as allowing it, because you can kind of get good with knowing where your boundaries are. And then you get to play the rest of the time because you kind of know exactly what's happening.
That's such an interesting way to frame it. And I've never heard it put like that, but I think that's so true. And it allows us to push boundaries in different ways than if we were kind of like aimlessly trying to like create, you know, a piece of, you know, media or art or whatever you want to call it.
Absolutely. And the amount of time you get to shoot, I think, was so beneficial for me as a filmmaker specifically. You know, I studied photography all growing up, so it's the same for photo. But, you know, just getting the reps in, you know, I was shooting every weekend, shooting events every single weekend. And I had other film friends pursuing film. And maybe they're shooting one big project every month or 2 months. And so I was over there like quadrupling my time on the camera, quadrupling my reps, even more, you know, throughout the week. And so I think that also was such a huge benefit to me just as an artist and getting to know my craft, was I was shooting every single weekend another wedding. That's why I love them. But yeah, you get to flex those muscles, you get to put in the reps, and you know, you get a little bit better. I hope. I feel like I got better.
No, that's so true. We took like the opposite approach of you, Paul and I. We got in with weddings, and then we have a commercial brand separately now. And it is kind of cool to now know, like, because I'm sure you do like other maybe commercial projects here and there for brands and companies and stuff. And it's so cool how each world benefits each other. So like basically, like when we go in and we shoot a commercial project, there's a lot that we're taking from our live event experience to put into the commercial project. And we've received feedback from clients that say, oh, wow, like you guys are so fast. Like you're so quick. And it's like, well, yeah, you got to be quick when you only have one take, like on a live event. So it kind of is cool how it serves both mediums.
Yeah, I feel like I'm a little bit more, I'm quite decisive with, in knowing what I want now. And I don't know if I had that when I first started out. I'd even say now, I think I have just found my voice as an artist, probably in the past year and a half, you know, after doing it for 6-7 years. I feel like I'm just finding, you know, the thing I want to say and the voice in my art. And it's taken a long time, but I think those reps for me are really important, getting those in and just trying to master the craft a little bit. But yeah, I was always worried. I was like, I don't know if I have a perspective. And I finally feel as if like my voice is starting to come out as an artist after 7 years.
That's so cool.
That's awesome. And that's
really encouraging to hear for those of you who may be listening to this, who kind of feel maybe a little stuck, or you feel like you're kind of in this like imposter syndrome place where you're just mimicking what you see. Like, it takes time, it takes reps, and it takes persistence in, you know, in your business and your art in order to get to the point where you feel confident and comfortable 100%. Now, Chris, I think that you're definitely an expert when it comes to being really decisive. And I think that comes in with art, but also with business decisions. And you've shared your story, you know, on other podcasts and Inside Our Mastermind and different things like that. But one thing you really do is take a lot of risks. And wow, have they paid off for you. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think like looking over my career and kind of the themes of my career, I saw that risk-taking was a theme. And it came from, you know, a lot of people would tell me, Chris, you're so good at taking risks. You're so good at taking risks. And to be honest, it was a little annoying because they didn't feel easy to me. It felt like I was taking a really big risk. And I was kind of, you know, I would think about that and be like, why do people think I'm good at taking risks? Like, it's just as scary as it looks for me to do. And I think, you know, the benefit of getting to do, you know, I was in these high-end weddings, starting to be in those circles, and I got to meet a lot of people, NBA players, NFL players, billionaires, millionaires, great business people, politicians, you know, meeting so many different people, having intimate conversations with them. And you realize at any level and at all levels, excuse me, people are nervous. It's no different. Everybody is nervous. And so my philosophy and the thing that I kind of thought about and was able to put together was that, you know, risk-taking is a muscle and you can flex it and you can get better at it. It doesn't necessarily make those risks any less risky, but it is a muscle that you can flex. And I think if everybody is nervous, if everybody is scared to take a risk, then one way to set yourself, you know, ahead of the pack, just objectively, is to take the risks that everybody is scared to do. And if you can just do that and kind of muscle your way into doing the scary thing that everyone else is nervous to do, you're going to automatically put yourself out in front of the pack. And so, yeah, I think like when I think about risks, I kind of break them into three different categories. I take them as creative risks, business risks, and then personal risks. And I can kind of quickly speak to each of those. I think, you know, this is just how I break it up to kind of, you know, systemize it a little bit. And these for me are probably within 3 to 6 months of each risk-taking a bucket. So creative risks, it's pushing yourself to do something new and innovative. You know, for me, 6 years ago, I shot a free video for my friend Lynn Easton. And I remember I was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to really do it for free. So then I did these same day edits. And I remember I sent it to her at 1 a.m. and she called me at 2 a.m. and said, what is this? And I said, well, it's an edit. And she's like, but who paid for it? We didn't need that. And I said, no, it's for you to post on social media. She said, why? I said, so you can have it and just post it and make this event more successful. And they'd never seen anything like that. And I haven't really slept since that date because now same day edits kind of became an industry norm. Not saying that I created those, but I think, you know, at a time when that wasn't happening and it wasn't that easy, I was really trying to take a creative risk. Like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go all the way. I'm going to go super, super free. I'm going to get every dollar out of this, which means blowing everyone's socks off. So that was like a story about creative risk taking. And I have a lot of stories I can share. But I think once after you push something forward, you're creative forward. And so now you have this new product, maybe something that you feel as if it is different and new, and it could be anything. That's just a story from my career. Then it's your job to let people know about that product that you offer. And people aren't just going to find out. They're not just going to call you. You have to let people know. So for me, that's business risk taking or marketing, you could call it. And I call it business risk taking. And it, for me, that's letting people know who I am and what I'm about. So that's not Facebook ads for me. For me, that was like a birthday party. I did a birthday party a couple of years ago. And, you know, that was a huge risk. It was very scary for me. You know, I invited my whole industry. I had 400 people come out to a big party in New York City. And that for me was more just about letting people know who I was, what I'm about, I'm not out there telling people, hi, I, you know, shoot videos. They already know. But, you know, for me, it's to let people know who I am, what I'm about, making sure people are aware of Chris, of Storybox. And so I kind of do those back and forth. I'll take some time to push my creative forward, create a new product. Maybe that's in a season of, you know, I kind of feel like last season was that for me, is trying new things, pushing my work forward, you know, trying to hone in on little, you know, new details that I'm working on. And then after that is to let people know that I'm around, not that people don't know, but really let them know. And so I always have fun, creative, new, crazy ideas for that. And then after that is personal risk taking. I think once you push that creative forward and now you've let people know, so people are now aware of who you are, what you do, they know the product that you offer, you have to become that thing. And that's taking a personal risk and being exactly who you are and stepping into that. It's not kind of being that, it's 100% being that. And I always say, if you're willing to, if you put out a new product, you have to be able to execute that all the way through now forever. Because if you have a new product, like for me, same day edits, I wasn't quite prepared to do that on every single wedding, but I had to. And so now when we take risks and put out new products, if we try them and they're successful, we implement them across the board and create a system on how we can make this happen. Because now when you let people know that it's available, they're going to want it, and you can't screw up at that point. You have to be able to execute at that level. And it's just about really stepping into that in confidence and in knowing that you can offer that, knowing that you can charge what you need to charge. So it's kind of, those are the three kind of buckets that I see my risk taking going, and they all kind of go in, you know, like 1, 2, 3, and maybe that's over a year's time. And that's how I push my business forward and my personal growth forward and my marketing. And yeah, but I can answer any questions. That's like the high level overview of kind of how I think about, you know, taking risks. But I do think that it is a muscle. You can flex it and you can get better at it. And to me, it's an easy way to stand out in front of everyone, because everybody is effing scared. It's not that scared feeling doesn't go away, but you start to learn to trust your intuition more and start to trust what's going on a little bit more. So,
yeah. So well said. I think that it's kind of boiling down to, like, you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Like
100%.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. There's and this, anything like, worth having is worth working for.
Totally. And there's this great quote that I had pulled up, so I didn't butcher it, but it says, progress always involves risk. You can't steal second base and keep your foot on first. Frederick Wilcox. But I absolutely love that quote, because I think that's where people get stuck a lot, is they want this safety over here and while doing this thing. And I don't believe that can happen. I think, you know, in my career, I thought it was happening. I thought I was charging local and then kind of doing luxury. And what I found out, that no one was booking me local anymore. And I was making this leap that I thought I had my foot on one side of the cliff and I was going to stretch out and do the other. And I kind of realized that I was jumping and that there was no safety net and that I had no bookings locally anymore. I was doing a bunch of kind of pro bono work at luxury level, not getting paid for either now at this moment. And I had to land on the other side. And so that quote always connects a lot to me. But I do think, you know, risk taking is scary. It definitely is. But once you start seeing the payoffs, you know, it becomes a little bit easier. That muscle gets more worked out, and all of a sudden those risks, in some sense, do become a little bit easier because you have a track record of showing that they work. But you start to trust yourself a little bit more, knowing that this is where a good risk is to take, and this is worth it, and this is worth investing in. So, yeah.
I'm going to come back to that, advice. What you just said, of like kind of that discernment, you know, of which is a good risk to take. But just a few weeks ago, actually, this is like ringing a bell. We just recorded an episode called Burning the Boats. I don't know, Chris, if you're familiar with that story.
No.
Was it Christopher Columbus, Kelly, who came?
No,
who was it?
It was, I'll look it up, but keep it going and then I'll bring the history in. But the concept of it.
A famous conqueror. Not Christopher Columbus. Kelly, you take it. You told the story on the podcast, but listeners should go check that one out for sure.
Yeah, no, it's such a good episode. And it's a common phrase used by a lot of motivational speakers of the concept of, like, if you want to take the island, you have to burn the boats. So if you want to just go and take over and conquer this new area of your business or whatever it could be. But it was like a real life history. I'm going to look it up on my phone and then I'll bring it back.
Yeah, I think I have heard this story actually.
Yeah. So basically they showed up to conquer this island and the crew started to get scared after they got off the boat and they were like taking refuge back into the boats. And their leader was like, no, we're just going to burn the boats right now. So there's no going back to the boats. And so it sounds like with you coming to that realization, like that's a very burn the boat moment in your business. And I'm sure you've had many of those too. And that's like the truth.
We're burning boats left and right.
Yeah, no, it's so powerful to like know that, hey, I'm going all in on this. I'm not going to take refuge back in my boat and go back to the mainland. I'm here on the island. I'm taking over this island. I'm conquering this island. And for those listening, if you can kind of pinpoint right now where you might be taking refuge in a certain boat, I would advise you to look for ways to burn that boat. And yeah.
Burn that shit down. Sorry. Are we allowed to cut it? Burn it down.
This one will be marked as explicit. That's funny.
Burn those boats down. No, I love it. I mean, I really do think that's such a downfall of so many people, and not rightfully so. It makes a ton of sense. It is very scary to take that jump, but I think not having a safety net is the thing that almost makes it successful. You have to succeed. And, you know, I think when I started out, I even look back at myself and kind of like, man, what was I trying to prove? Like, I had some fire in me. Like, I was not taking no for an answer. No is not an option. I was going to win. I'm kind of competitive, if you can tell. And, but yeah, I was like, I'm going to make this happen. Like, I do not care what gets in my way. And there are some sacrifices, and it's not always fun. And you kind of have to make sure that you're, you know, maybe discern on what sacrifices to take. I was kind of all in, and it was a little scary, but I was going to be, I was going to make it work. So, yeah.
Yeah. You can't just stay, you're going to stay stagnant when you get comfortable. And so, like you said, like flexing that muscle and getting uncomfortable in your business is a very real thing, and it should be. The second that we start to get comfortable is when we stop growing. And Taylor and I know that we've had experiences in our businesses where we got comfortable. I definitely have, for sure. And then you start to see like, okay, wow, I'm not growing. And then you have to pinpoint as to why. So taking risks are good. It's going to feel scary, but it's something that you can start to do. And like Chris said, just like stretch that and build that muscle up.
And I'd even say one other thing, I just like maybe a practical way, because I'm all about practical advice, is, you know, you can look through those, you know, creative risk-taking, business risk-taking, and just see, for me, it's what it, you know, when I looked out in a lot of different times in my life, trying to take a risk, I would look at what is everybody doing? Okay, great. I'm not going to do that thing because that's not working. Or maybe it's worked for a certain group of people, or maybe it's worked for a certain time, but to mimic that doesn't really work. I think it needs to be something totally different. And I have lots of stories about that. Even like, you know, a long time ago, I was working really, this is like 10 years ago, I was trying to become big on Instagram. Like, Instagram had these suggested users that they would suggest to everybody. And so we would do these weekly photo contests from Instagram. This is back when Instagram was more about photography and more about this community that they had. And so we would do these weekly hashtag projects they'd talk about. And that was kind of where I started to learn about this idea of just doing something different. So for example, and I'll tell this really quick story, then we can keep moving on, but each weekend they'd have a hashtag project. So mine that I happened to win was weekend hashtag project silhouette. You know, so what I would end up doing is realizing that the people that would pick the photos on that would win were looking through the iPhone just like me. They're just scrolling. They didn't have any other secret software. They're scrolling Instagram. And so what I would do is, you know, if you do a, let's say I know this is kind of a weird story, but if you would look at sunsets, most you could see what everybody was posting on the weekend hashtag project. So for that one, when you say silhouette, 99% of the photos were someone standing in a sunset, because that is the first thing that comes to mind. And so everyone goes out and takes a cool sunset photo with someone standing in front. Well, that one's not going to win, not because those photos aren't good. It's not about if that photo is good or not. It's that it's not going to catch anybody's eye because there's thousands of them. So I would immediately try to do something different from what everyone else is doing. And it worked, because you're scrolling through 1,000 sunsets and now you see this one random photo that is a totally different concept. I don't think, you know, taking risks and being successful creatively is never about skill. I really don't. I mean, we have to be good, but if you were to look at all these sunset photos, they're awesome. They're incredible photos, but did they win? No, because they all look the same. And so I think it's about being intentional about how you take these risks. And that's kind of where I started to learn this idea, was like, okay, I've just got to do something different. It's going to catch someone's eye. Is the photo objectively better? Maybe, maybe not, but it's different enough to catch somebody's eye and grab their attention. And so that's how then I work that concept into a lot of other ways of my business. It's not that you know, doing the same thing is bad, or that the footage, or that, you know, those photos or that style or that edit is bad. It's probably pretty great. It's just like, from a business side, are people going to see you? Are they going to notice you? Probably not, you know? So what can you do absolutely different than everybody else? Cause that's already happening.
So, I mean, because I think most people's, by human nature, like, are, default is to just kind of mimic what everyone else is doing and to kind of put themselves in the same box, and you're going in a completely different direction with the way you approach things. Like, how are you coming up with these ideas? Like, for example, how did you come up with the idea of throwing, you know, your big birthday bash? Like, how are these ideas coming to you where you're like, that's the one that's going to set me apart?
I don't exactly know. I do think I have a lot of ideas that are kind of like flowing through my head a lot. Sometimes an idea comes in and you're like, oh, that's it. Like, I think just being open, man, how do you come up with new ideas? I mean, I think one, even going back to what I said before, was like a lot of time in the saddle, shooting a lot, and you're just going to start being interested in different things as you do something. To me, like, once I get bored, then I want to try something new. And so I love mastering something. So I think part of it, I'm not saying I'm like some master cinematographer, but I do have a lot of time in weddings, a lot of time with my camera. And so you become kind of the second nature, you know how to shoot. And I don't know, for me, it's really following my intuition and my curiosity. So I really do, you know, for me on a wedding, if we're just talking maybe, and I know you asked about the birthday party, but for me creatively, I really work hard now to kind of be in, and I don't want to sound too hippie, but really flow state. Like, I listen to jazz before we go to a wedding. You know, my team is not allowed to ask me technical questions during the wedding day. I'm not interested in anything tech. I'm interested in what's happening in front of my lens. And so I have an incredible team now that really allows me to just be open. And that was intentional, right? That was like 2 years ago. I said, I really don't want to have to be a part of any of this text. I'm not interested in the sound. I don't care what, I mean, I do care, but I'm not, please don't come to me. Do you want 4K or 6K, 10-bit or four, you know, people come out and I'm like, don't talk to me. Like, it pulls me out so much of like, what, you know, I don't give a crap about, you know, so now we hire incredible people that know exactly what they're doing for that reason. Their job is not to come to me. And my job is to be there. And I really like to observe and watch and maybe try new things with my camera. I think a lot of people are scared to try risks on the wedding day. And I say, triple down and take risks on wedding days. You know, I was chatting with a colleague a little bit ago, and she had mentioned she had booked one of her biggest weddings ever. And she was really trying to kind of plan it all out. I said, that's great. If you want my advice, I think you should take one of your biggest risks on this job. Do something totally creatively different. Try some brand new shot. You know, for me recently with the drone, it's been, instead of coming down the aisle, you know, I can now, you know, the classic aisle shot, little things like, what if I take the drone and get that shot and go all in and get it for vertical, for social? You know, I'm trying to look where people's eyes are. Where am I getting the most views? How are people, you know, taking in my work, and just trying to make smart decisions about that. So several times I've drop that shot down the aisle. Maybe I'll have one of our shooters capture it, but I'm trying to pull off some crazy matching with the sunset, the drone coming up as they're kissing and walking, you know, and sometimes I fail, but that's okay, because we have the backup shot, you know. But I'm really trying to push myself each time. I feel like that's kind of my job as the owner and leader, is to, I'm going to push that forward. I'm going to go out and try something a little bit different. So that's a long-winded answer to say, I think time in the saddle, and I think really being open, not just trying to capture what you're supposed to capture, but saying, how would I like to see this film? You know, what's interesting to me? I love watching documentaries. I love watching movies. I think chefs are really inspirational to me, and food, and these master chefs who have Michelin star restaurants and their journeys. It's all about trying and failing. And I always say, fail really fast. I'll try stuff, fail, and throw it in the trash. You know, try stuff and fail, but it's just about getting those reps in and trying stuff. I mean, I've failed a lot. I just don't let people know.
Yeah. No, No. That's so good. I love on your Instagram bio, you have, how did it feel to be there? And I think with you saying how you get into that flow state, I think that's truly how you can really head into a wedding day and capture it, and taking a lot of steps back. This is my 14th season. And one thing that I started to notice as we were going through each season, when we would work with more and more experienced photographers, we stopped shooting with photographers that overshot. They just kind of like were more intentional about what they wanted to shoot. And I think that that's something that comes with like great experience. And also, if that's like what you what you value as an artist as well. But I love, and your films definitely feel that way. And you could tell now, and even talking to you about how you go into a wedding day and how you don't want to be bogged down by technical questions. You really just want to soak in each new environment from that event and be sure that you're capturing things in a way that really brings forth the feeling. So that's so cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even maybe more recent, I've been breaking the fourth wall a lot more. I mean, that was something that I used to never want anybody to know that I was a filmmaker there, you know, never be aware of the camera. And now I'm flipping the other way. I actually want people to be very aware of the camera. And I'm actually talking with people. Maybe I'm like shaking hands with people over my camera, but the camera is now just kind of a part of me. And so that's like some new experiments I'm playing with and just seeing how does that feel? How does it work? You know, and to me, I'm loving it. I'm really loving how it's coming across. But yeah, I love taking risks, and I think it's such a payoff, you know, when you, like, for anyone out there with a big event, I don't think, yes, you need to play it safe. Of course, we have a contractual obligation to get these videos done, but I'll tell you a story that my friend Marcy Bloom, we were on a trip in Mexico a couple of years ago, and she was sitting there, and I was telling her how I wanted to be everything for everybody. And I could film with everybody, and I can film everywhere. And she said, "Have a damn perspective." I said, "What?" And she said, "Oh my God, like, have a damn perspective. We don't want you to be everything for everybody. We hired you because we know you and we want your perspective." And I still get goosebumps now because it really changed my trajectory of my career, because I realized it was my job to actually speak up. And, you know, I was so scared. People would say, "What do you think about this, Chris?" And I say, "Well, it could be anything. It could be whatever you guys think." And they're not interested in that. They're interested in, "Chris, what do you think?" And so now I'm very happy to give my opinion. And it's actually my duty to give my opinion. I mean, that's why I'm getting higher. That's why I'm getting paid, is because I have an opinion about it. And this is how I want it to be seen. And so I think it's our job. And I was trying to be everything for everyone for a long time. And maybe that was great in the beginning to kind of get in. But man, Marcy yelling at me on the beach, "Have a damn perspective." And you're like, "What does that mean?" She's like, "Tell us what you think. You know, show us the way that you want it to be shown." And it really changed a lot for me. And so now it's my job to actually find that voice and be there. I actually feel like it is my duty to be in that flow state. I know that's like, whoo. But it's my duty. That's how I do my best work. And my job is to come in and tell the story from my perspective. It's not to capture it and to do this perfect. It's to tell it. This is what I see is happening. This is how I envision it. And people are paying for my vision now. And so that, you know, I've really tried to work on that. And that's not to say it's great. You know, there's other people's visions, but, you know, for Storybox, they're coming because they see the way I see it. They like the way I see it. And so my job is to make sure, you know, if I was to be really stressed out and kind of all worried about everything and just capturing it, you know, I always tell our shooters, one, we are not tripods. Like, they did not hire us to be a tripod. We are not just rolling camera on this event. That is not, if I wanted that, I would have gotten four tripods, not four amazing shooters. And their job is to come back with, I need one, at least one shot that they're so excited about. We're looking for those magic shots. So I you know, we do reviews after each event, kind of like a sports team. We go through the event. We have, you know, go through the good parts, the bad parts. We have critiques for each. Everyone is open for critiques. But I would much rather have one incredible shot than a whole card full of like a third angle from the side of everything. Like, I'm not going to use that. I'm interested in hearing your perspective as well. So we try to give a lot of that back to our shooters as well. You know, their job is to be creative. That's why we hired them. It's not to just be a tripod and not just to capture. It is to, you know, what, let's do something differently. And so we push everybody, every event, to try to do that.
That's so interesting to hear. And I love that. And I think that there's such a great distinction to make here too, because in the beginning, we're more of a commodity serving that budget client, because those clients are so focused on price point. Like, if you fit their budget and they kind of like your work, they're going to hire you. Like, that's just how it kind of works. But as you grow and scale, and these high net worth clients really just think about the world differently, and they see you more as an artisan, and like somebody who's creating a one of a kind thing, and they trust you as the expert to have a perspective. And I think that's such a cool shift to see. And I think it's one that so many of us, like, because we have camera skills and a business, but like, we like to think of ourselves as artists. And I think that's what so many people really want our clients to value in us. So I feel like if there's any reason to reach for that luxury market, like, that's one great reason, is because of that level of trust and desire for what you create, like, uniquely to you. And also pointing out too that you're hiring a really quality team. So many people sleep on like the second and third shooters. Like they're just kind of like filling that space due to contractual obligation and finding the cheapest option out there. And I think like the way you've done it and the way you've structured it has just allowed your films to get even better, which makes your brand even better. Like being able to actually count on people for like great shots, like that's a game changer.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it totally is. And you know, I'd even just say, I go back to how it's been going recently where my team will take up and do all the speeches. They'll do all the ceremony. And we have our team structured in the way where, you know, the lead is kind of free to capture whatever they want. The second then is watching and making sure they're capturing everything the lead isn't capturing. And then the third, the second is in charge of the third shooter. And then the third shooter is more about setting up audio, tripods, ceremony, moving that to speeches. But yeah, for me just to observe, and we had this one incredible wedding earlier this year where we had like an hour and a half of speeches, and I don't necessarily need to be in there. I will come in there and get the shots that I think, but we have it fully covered. And I was outside on the drone for the whole time, just trying to get one shot of the rainbow hitting with a horse coming, you know, and I spent an hour working on it, changed out batteries, flew it up again. And I finally got one shot, but I think that's the beauty that having such a good team allows for, you know, that I can actually get to kind of sit in the moment and think about what's going on. And you know, you have to have some space to be creative. I do think, you know, I love the pressure of a wedding. I love the boiling pot of it. I think it offers a lot of creative solutions. When you're in there, you're like, I produced this. This is crazy. You know, how did I do that? But also some space is really nice. And so that's what an incredible team has allowed me to do, is just to have that time and to just watch. You know, so much of my day now for a wedding is just trying to observe. I'm not always recording. I'm just trying to see what's happening and try to kind of anticipate when a moment's going to happen. But a lot of it is just watching and being quiet. And I'm a loud, obnoxious dancing goof a lot of times. But I think during weddings, I'm pretty quiet. I really try to be a good listener and observe and just kind of take in what's happening. And then my job is, to, you know, I think where our expertise comes in as filmmakers and photographers is knowing when those moments are going to happen, being ready to record when you're like, well, I knew those people were going to go hug because I saw them get up and them get up and they made eye contact, you know, so being aware of everything. I kind of feel like everyone in the wedding industry has a spidey sense. You kind of are like, all right, this is about to happen. So, yeah.
Yeah, anticipation is huge. I actually think that, you know, when the world shut down during the pandemic and getting back into weddings and like not being in the saddle as much, one of the skills that was weakened, my spidey sense was taken away a little bit, was the anticipation of things. Mm. I really recognized that going back in and getting back in the flow of weddings. I'm like, I should have captured that moment. I should have seen that. How did I not see that was like, how did I not anticipate that? And so it is, like you said, it's such a crucial skill to have, and just to have that awareness and, you know, sense to be like, okay, let's take a step back and yeah, let's watch the general behavior of all these guests and how, you know, I'm going to try to find them at cocktail hour. They're probably going to be like chatting and they'll be a great group to kind of capture all those things. Anticipations like in the getting ready with like a mother and daughter or father and son, things like that, brothers. It's that's, I think, really truly like how even what you would say for your brand is like, how did it feel to be there? Those are really those moments that pull that, you know, to fruition.
Totally. And again, I really do think it's our duty to do that. I think so many people tell me, well, what if we miss this thing? Or what if we don't get it covered? And I'm like, we're not going to miss the important parts, but I would rather have this angle of the shot and not get a safety shot of it. I'd rather get this style. I'd rather bank that I'm going to be able to get this shot than like, make sure I get the safety shot of it. You know, I'd rather do this over here. And I think I really see it as my duty now. Like that's, if I was to see a shot that could be taken safely, or if I had a beautiful idea for it and I didn't take that, that to me is not serving my clients. My job would be to get that cool shot the way that I want to tell it. And it would be a disservice to lock it on a tripod and be like, well, we got it safe. You know, that's not what we do. And that's not my job. My job is to tell it the way that I would like to see it. And so I really do think it's our duty to like take those risks.
So good. Well, Chris,
can I ask one question? Oh my gosh, sorry, you were about to wrap up, but I'm about to ask you guys a question. I was just going to ask, you know, for y'all, what do you think is the biggest hurdle for people as they're trying to make it into the next level? You know, your listeners, photographers, videographers, any creatives, you know, that are trying to push that. What do you guys see as you've had all these amazing conversations that, you know, is a barrier for people that they're trying to get through.
Ooh, there's so many, honestly. I feel like the room could be filled with just like pain points or maybe even excuses. But one of the biggest things I would say, just to kind of like sum it all up, is that they're wanting to use the same systems that worked for them to where their business is now. And then they're not willing to kind of get uncomfortable and make changes in their business to get where they want to go. So they kind of think that, yeah, everything that they did for maybe the first 5 years of business is exactly what they need to keep doing in order to, like, they just need to keep spinning the wheels and keep going and going and going.
Right.
And I actually feel like when people get into, say, our mastermind program or watch our course, Taylor and I say right away, like, this is going to be a lot of undoing of what you previously thought was working. There's going to be a lot of undoing of probably education that was more on a beginner level instead of like what our new approach is now. And those who are like open and like ready to adopt all the new things and take the new risks and implement changes are the ones that really do see the big, big results. Cool. Taylor, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, kind of just to reframe that kind of same concept, like people who are stubborn and closed-minded. Like if you're closed-minded and unwilling to take advice or you know, accept different ways of doing things from people who have already done it, thinking your way is better, that you, like, you know what I mean, that you've created on your own. Like, yeah, those are people who we see kind of like not sinking, but they're kind of treading water, like right where they are. Yeah. And it causes a lot of frustration that we see in people. And that, and unfortunately, I mean, addressing kind of like an elephant in the room, like social media, people love to talk. And a lot of times the way frustration takes form in the keyboard warriors is by bashing other people. And so I feel like when we see people being really negative towards other people who have made it, or being really negative towards a certain niche or genre within the luxury or within the industry specifically, a lot of people like to hate on like the luxury industry or like whatever. I don't know. I don't really understand why, but I think it's because like they're frustrated that they couldn't do it. And the reason why is because they are a little stubborn, and that's okay. Like being stubborn is not always a bad thing. I think holding tight in your worldview is just fine. But you can't be like, don't hate the player, hate the game kind of thing, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. There's sometimes a lot of hate for the luxury stuff. I don't exactly know why. I'm like, hey, it's super fun. We get to work with incredible creatives. I think what's so fun for me is you get to work with incredible creatives across the board. Like, brilliant people. I get to interact with incredible musicians who inspire me, incredible designers, floral designers, lighting designers. All of that impacts my work, not only just practically and visually, you know, through my lens, but just to be around amazing creatives who have run successful businesses. It seriously is like an honor every time to get to be a collaborator within these group of people. You know, even the carpet people or the tent people, these people are all brilliant. They're doing incredible, incredible work, and it's so fun to be a part of. And I do think, you know, once, even just maybe, you know, this is obviously what your guys' mastermind is too, but being surrounded by people who are thinking in that way is always really helpful too. I think there's some quote that's like, you're the average of the five closest people around you. And so
100%,
you know, I feel lucky to get to have so many incredible friends in this industry. And I get, you know, I always want to be the dumbest person in the room, if possible. I would like to not, you know, I want to be learning all the time. And I, even when I tell our shooters, when they work with us, they say our job is to shut up and listen, and people will tell you everything they want to tell you if you just shut up. We don't need to fill the space. We don't need to talk too much. We're all, you know, everyone here is wildly charismatic and very good at shooting. But why I brought you was to, you know, be quiet, listen, and you're going to learn a lot from people just from being quiet in the room and asking good questions. And you're probably going to learn a lot more than you thought you were. And so that's, you know, the approach I try to take with every event. And yeah, you can learn a lot from people.
Yeah. It's so like the wise old adage where it's like you have two ears and one mouth for a reason. Like, listen twice as much as you speak. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Let the people tell you. There's so much good information out there from talented individuals. Yeah. That have lived a lot of life experience. So yeah, it's a wonderful industry, and it's been really, really fun.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for your time and your knowledge. I loved how you talked about the buckets of risks that you do. That was so mind-blowing. I'm sure that's going to be something that people are going to be chewing on for weeks ahead, and I hope that they do. It's, again, so inspiring to see you really taking the filmmaking section of the market specifically, but also for photographers listening to, it's so inspiring to watch you just like break ceilings as you guys continue to scale seriously, and consistently put out really, really incredible work. And what you've built is so, so inspiring. And Taylor and I are inspired. I'm sure all the listeners are inspired as well. So real quick, before we say goodbye, can you just tell everyone who's listening right now where they can find you so that they're not missing out on your beautiful work and everything you have going on in 2024?
Yeah, of course. So you can Storybox Cinema on Instagram, and then C. Jesperson is my personal, but it's also kind of like Storybox related stuff. I'm happy to have any conversations with anyone. Anybody can shoot me a message whenever, and I usually will voice memo back when I'm driving, but like happy to have conversations with anyone, any questions. This year we are traveling all over. It's a nice year. We're going to New York soon, and then a lot of time in Europe. We're going back to France and Italy a bunch, and we'll be over there doing some speaking and some weddings, and I love Europe. So find me in Europe, and then also everywhere. So we'll be around the world this year, like we always do. But it's going to be a really exciting year. It feels like it's shaping up to be a really good one. A lot of exciting clients that I can't talk about because like all my work is becoming NDAs, but that's okay. They're going to be amazing. I'm sure they'll be posted the next day, even though there is an NDA, you know, somehow that always happens, but yeah, it's going to be an exciting year. And I hope to chat with lots of people over Instagram, whatever. I'm always available.
Awesome. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you for joining us in today's conversation. Please help us reach more filmmakers and photographers like you by taking a screenshot and sharing it to social media. And don't forget to tag us at The Level Up Co.
And join us again next week, same time, same place, as we continue to level up the industry together.